Our discussion last week centered on this meteoric and volatile Samson from the book of Judges, chapter 13. And we examined his God-announced miraculous birth by a mysterious manifestation of God termed the angel of the Lord from the long void womb of his aged mother, and we discussed his status as a Nazarite that actually began while he was still in and part of his mother's body. He would retain that Nazir status all of his life, even if he did not maintain all of its requirements. Samson was of the tribe of Dan, whose allotted territory was unfortunately located adjacent to the coastal region that was dominated by the powerful Philistines, also known as the Sea Peoples. Samson was part of only a small remnant of Danites who had elected to remain in central Canaan as the bulk of their tribe migrated well north to the Lebanese border area, and there they reestablished themselves. The Philistines had proved too formidable for them to carry out God's instructions to drive them out, to drive the Philistines out of the promised land for which they were responsible. So now the descendants of the tribe of Dan lived either up north or they lived in small enclaves in some of the other Israelite tribal territories, Judah being one of the primary locations because it was the nearest to them, and it was among the larger of the territories. Now, I want to remind you that it was Samson's God-ordained purpose to begin to address the oppression, or maybe better, strong influence of the Philistines and their pagan culture upon the local Israelites. Samson would not, and it wasn't his assignment, to deliver Israel from their enemy, only to begin the process by stirring up trouble between the Philistines and the Israelites, who had constructed this peaceful coexistence that was precisely against anything that the Lord wanted for his people. I'll also remind you that this was but a continuation of the holy war begun by Joshua. Samson's actions were, in a sense, God-sanctioned. Now, while Shimshon, Samson's motives and methods were pretty questionable, if not downright criminal, the Lord influenced him and at certain critical moments anointed Samson with supernatural strength. Now, those critical moments came often after Samson went astray from Hebrew cultural norms and from the law of Moses in such a way as to precipitate some crisis or another. So Samson and his relationship with Jehovah God and the manner Jehovah worked through Samson is pretty unique among the judges and not something, I think, that we ought to seek for ourselves for the most part. So let's read Judges 14 to start things off today. Open your Bibles to Judges chapter 14, page 287. Shimshon went down to Timnah, and in Timnah I saw a woman who was one of the Philistines. And he came up and told his father and mother, "I saw a woman in Timnah, one of the Philistines. Now get her for me to be my wife." His father and mother replied, "Isn't there any woman from the daughters of your kinsmen or among all my people? Must you go to the uncircumcised Philistines to find a wife?" And Shimshon said to his father, "Get her for me. I like her." And his father and mother didn't know that all this came from Adonai, who was seeking grounds for a quarrel with the Philistines. All that time, the Philistines were ruling Israel. So Shimshon, Samson, went down with his father and mother to Timnah. And when they came to the vineyards of Timnah, a young lion roared at him. And the spirit of Adonai came powerfully upon Samson, and barehanded he tore the lion to pieces as easily as if it had been a young goat. But he didn't tell his father or mother what he had done. Then he went down and talked with the woman and found he still liked her. A while later, as he was returning to claim his bride, he turned aside to look at the carcass of the lion and saw that there was now a swarm of bees in the body of the lion and honey. He scraped the honey out into his hands and went on, eating as he went. And when he came to his father and mother, he gave them some. And they ate too, but he didn't tell them that he'd scraped the honey out of the body of the lion. His father went down to the woman, and there Samson gave a banquet. This is what the young men used to do. And when the Philistines saw him, they provided 30 companions to be with him. And Shimshon said to them, "Let me present you with a riddle. And if you can solve it within the 7 days of the banquet and tell me the solution, I will give you 30 linen shirts and 30 changes of good clothes. But if you can't solve it, you give me 30 linen shirts and 30 changes of good clothes." And they answered, "Tell us the riddle. We want to hear it." So he said to them, "Out of the eater came food, out of the strong came sweetness." 3 days passed. They couldn't solve the riddle. Well, on the seventh day, they said to Shimshon's wife, "Coax your husband into telling us the solution to the riddle. Otherwise, we'll burn down your father's house with you in it. You two called us here to turn us into paupers, didn't you?" Samson's wife went to him in tears and said, "You don't love me. You hate me. You took a riddle to my fellow countrymen, and you haven't told me the answer." And he said to her, "Look, I haven't even told it to my father and mother. Why should I tell you?" But she'd been crying throughout the 7 days of the banquet. So on the seventh day, because she had kept pressing him, he told her the solution. She passed it on to the people. Then before sundown on the seventh day, the men of the city said to him, "What is sweeter than honey? What is stronger than a lion?" And Samson answered, "If you hadn't plowed with my young cow, you wouldn't have solved my riddle now." Then the spirit of Adonai came over him powerfully. He went down to Ashkelon. He killed 30 of their men, took their good clothes, and gave them to the men who had solved the riddle. He was boiling with rage. So he went straight up to his father's house, and his wife was given to the companion who had been the best man at the wedding. Ooh. Samson was around 18 to 19 years old. Think about that. 18 to 19, when the Spirit of God came upon him for the first recorded time back in chapter 13. So he's probably about 20 as we enter chapter 14, and Samson spies a girl he'd like for a wife. Verse 1 explains he went down to Timnah. Now, Samson's home was in Sorah, which is in the foothill area of Judah, an elevation of probably around 800 feet. Timnah was a mostly Philistine city at this time, located in the area that the Philistines preferred. And that's on the coastal plain of Canaan, and sometimes it's called, referred to as the Shephelah. Now, I've been taken to task occasionally for calling the area where the 12 tribes had now lived for at least three centuries, Canaan. But historically, that's accurate. Israel was a named nation only in the sense that it consisted of a people group that stemmed from a common ancestor, Jacob. As of this point, they were not a country. They were fairly well united during Joshua's day as they accepted a common leader and a priesthood while Joshua lived. But very quickly after his death, they reverted to a typical tribal society in which each tribe was its own entity. And the only other allegiance each tribe held was to whatever treaty-based relationships they had formed. There was no sovereign nation of Israel with a central government. And it's that eventual formation of a central government that is the historical marker that actually ends the era of the judges and begins the era of the kings. The formation of the central government led by a king is also when Israel was finally called Israel. Bottom line, during the era of the Shoftim, the judges, there were 12 Hebrew tribes plus the Levites who inhabited the land of Canaan, but in no way was that place called Israel yet. Now, Samson was in Timnah one day for some unknown purpose, but it may be because one of his friends told him about this beautiful unmarried girl. When this Philistine girl catches his eye, and he instantly falls in lust with her. That Samson saw a woman means more than to notice her existence. It means he saw her unveiled face, meaning from typical Middle Eastern cultural norms, this was a very immodest girl. He went to his parents. He asked them to get her for him. That might sound a little bit strange today, but what this is talking about is the usual custom, then, of parents negotiating the marriage among each other. So Shimshon's parents, well, they were horrified. Samson was a Nazarite. He was set apart for God when he was still an embryo. And a Nazarite was expected to be especially observant of the Torah. For him to want a Philistine girl, and a very immodest one at that, had to take their breath away. I mean, for one thing, this was against Hebrew law. Now, naturally, his parents want to know why he can't pick a woman from among their own people. And Samson's rash and disrespectful reply to that is, I want her. Go get her. Now, most versions say that he said, get her, she pleases me well. Actually, what it literally says is, get her, she's right in my sight. I mean, what a contrast. What a revealing of Samson's underlying characters contained in that abrupt answer to his parents. The contrast is that each time a new judge cycle begins, we have the Lord saying, Israel did what was evil in my sight. Now here is Samson saying that in his sight, this immodest pagan girl, that's the right choice of a wife for him. Samson is declaring that his judgment is beyond reproach, almost like Jehovah's. And if something is right in his sight, if it's good to his mind, well, there's just no point in discussing the matter further. Sounds a lot like a teen, doesn't it? And that's about what he was. But then we're given an important piece of information in verse 4, that Samson's parents' shock came from their not knowing that this all came from Adonai. This came from the Lord, who was seeking grounds for a quarrel. Think about that. God says, I'm doing this because I want to fight with the Philistines. Now, there's a lot of disagreement over whether it was Samson or the Lord who's the one seeking the means to start a fight. In some ways, I don't think it matters all that much. After all, we're told in no uncertain terms that the impulse in Samson to want this attractive heathen female as a wife came from God. So either way, Samson was just following through what was divinely destined to be. God had arranged this connection. He's going to use this situation to move against his enemy, the Philistines. Now this is a sight of God that most theologians and modern Christians would like to believe is gone. The side where justice is replaced by love and mercy. The side where the sin of a believer, no matter how egregious, brings no consequences with it. The side of God where obedience is simply a thing of the past. And now all we have to do is feel love towards him and one another. See, here in Judges, we have the Judges, rather, we have the Lord picking a fight with someone who apparently is not looking for one. And he's using Samson as his surrogate. The Lord doesn't like the peace and calm between his people and the Philistines. Why not? Because the Philistines don't belong there. They don't belong in Canaan. The Father gave direct instructions to Moses and Joshua to drive out or destroy all who oppose him from Canaan, but instead, his people decided they'd rather switch than fight. Now hear this, because I've heard this instruction from God absolutely twisted in the mouths of lay people and pastors and those who are antagonistic to the church. The only place this hawkish instruction applied, this instruction to drive out or kill, applied, was to Canaan. Because of all the places on earth, this was his place. Israel was to defend itself against foreigners, those living outside of Canaan. But they were to try to make peace with them, the foreigners, if it was at all possible. There was no worldwide crusade. There was no mass genocide decreed. So we have no reason to be cringing or apologizing for God's decisions back in that era. Now, Samson's parents caved in to his demands. So the three of them journey to Timnah so marriage arrangements can be made. And on the outskirts of that Philistine village was a vineyard where he and his parents separated. And going through the vineyard was the most direct route to Timnah. But since Shimshon was a Nazir, Samson was a Nazirite, he had to avoid contact with grapes. So he took the long way around. Suddenly, Samson stumbles across a lion. And the startled lion roared a threatening roar at him, and Samson leaped into action. The Lord was going to use this situation for his purposes, so we find in verse 6 that the Ruach of Yehovah, in other words, the Spirit of God, came upon Samson, imbued him with supernatural strength and courage, and with his bare hands, using no weapons at all, Samson literally tore the lion apart and killed it. I want to stop there for a second. Who can imagine fighting a lion under any circumstances, let alone without some kind of a weapon? But let's also not make more of this than it is. The Hebrew word used here for lion is kefir. And there are five Hebrew words for lion, and interestingly, they are not synonymous. Rather, each Hebrew word for lion sets up a hierarchy of that lion's maturity, in other words, his age. So we have the word gur, that means a baby lion, a small little cub, and at the other end of the scale, and where the oldest and most mature lion is called a laish. In between a gur and a laish, there are three other Hebrew words denoting different stages of a lion's development. Kefir is the second youngest stage. So what Samson fought was a mature cub, not even a young adult lion. So the typical illustrations of this huge male lion with his flowing mane is a bit over the top. Now, since Samson went a different route than his parents, mom and dad did not know about his adventure with the lion, and Samson didn't bring it up. Of course, this of itself is going to play a role in what comes a little bit later. So they arrive in Timnah, all three goes into the family home, of this unnamed Philistine girl, and Samson took some time to talk with her. Now, up to now, he had only been struck by her lovely appearance. And at this point, after getting to know her, he also became pleased with her countenance. Thus it says that he still liked her. Well, the next verse skips ahead quite a bit. Some amount of time passes. Samson's parents had apparently met their Philistine counterparts. Marriage terms were agreed to, and the betrothal period began. Now, how long this went on, we don't know, because undoubtedly it was some compromise between whatever the current Hebrew customs and whatever the current Philistines' ways were. So verse 8 has Samson returning to Timnah now to claim his bride. Again, his parents took a different route as they approached Timnah's vineyards. And along the way, he, of course, remembers the lion. And he went over to the same spot to see if the remains of it were still there, and surely enough, there they were. And the Complete Jewish Bible says it was a lion carcass. That's pretty accurate. See, the thing we have to get in mind is this was not a sun-bleached lion skeleton lying there. It was more like a mummy. It was summer in Canaan. It was hot. It was dry. And when at that time of year an animal died, it was usual for scavengers to do their jobs, to empty it of its internal organs. But at the same time, the sun and lack of humidity has this rapid effect of dehydrating the remaining skin and flesh in the same way meat or fish destined for food was commonly flayed and laid open to the sun to become dried and then preserved for later use. It was inside the cavity of this lion, where skin was still stretched over that skeleton, that a colony of bees had established a hive. Now, honey was a prized food. There wasn't a great deal of it. Bees were not cultivated in hive farms like we have now. And it offered a wonderful and rare flavor, so Samson was quick to take advantage. He scraped some of it out of the carcass as much as he could into his hands, and he ate some, and then later offered some of it to his folks when he met up with them again. We're told that he withheld that little matter of where he got this honey from inside the dried up remains of a lion. Now look, a lion's an unclean animal. And this was a dead unclean animal. So while Samson didn't seem at all to be bothered by the prospect of either contact with this ritually impure object, nor even eating food taken out of it, his parents would not have eaten this honey had they known the source. I want to repeat something I said from last week. Technically, a Nazirite is not to touch a dead body under any circumstance. He could not even prepare and or bury his own parents. However, tradition had developed that in general, a Nazirite was not to contact any dead thing, including an animal. Apparently, they drew the line at unclean animals, otherwise sacrificing and eating meat was out. And there is no record of a Nazir requirement to become a vegetarian, or that the sacrificial requirements were held in abeyance until their vow period was over. Still, it's unimaginable that Samson's parents would have eaten honey taken from the corpse of a dead, unclean animal. This shows once again how Samson paid very little attention to the laws of Moses or even to Hebrew traditions if it didn't suit him, and he really didn't care too much about the feelings and concerns of others, or what he did negatively affected them. This apparently included even his own parents. So in verse 10, we're told that the marriage ceremony began. as Samson's father went down to greet Samson's bride-to-be. Now, no doubt, the situation was cordial. There's no hint that this was some tense situation or even wasn't particularly uncomfortable for either of the two families. In many ways, this is just another subtle picture of how familiar and at ease God's people had become with God's enemies. And it helps us to understand why Yehovah was going to do something about this ridiculous state of coziness between the two sides, and it ought not to exist. See, we're told that a banquet was served. I want to stop here and say something. I know this is the age of tolerance, even within the church, but I have seen too many offerings from the church with a handout to Islam, and too much from Islam with a handout to the church, where they just get together and understand each other better and mingle together and so on. I think this is a very bad idea. I think this is not something God wants. This is not about not being neighborly. This is about obedience. And how easily you can be co-opted. How easily you can find to say, well, we should at least respect their God and their ways. And so on. And what that leads to. Okay, we should not do this. This does not mean you have to be nasty to anybody. But that just struck me like a ton as I was reading this right now from my notes. That it's the wrong thing to do, and it's exactly what God was trying to stop. So we're told that a banquet was served, and that this was the way the young men used to go about a marriage ceremony. Now, the young men is referring to the Philistine young men. This banquet he was at was a Philistine tradition, not a Hebrew tradition. And since Samson was in Philistia, marrying a Philistine girl, there weren't any of Samson's Israelite buddies with him. So out of hospitality, the bride's family provided 30 Philistine men to be substitute companions for the groom. Now I suspect that Samson had at least some familiarity with many of these men, and especially the best man. Now apparently a Philistine wedding ceremony was a lot like a modern Western bachelor's party. I mean, I wonder how the bride felt about that. Only this party was a 7-day long affair. Well, as you can imagine, without a TV or a DJ, a 7-day long anything can get a little bit boring. So some kind of entertainment was called for. And since the nearest city of any size was Ashkelon, it wasn't feasible that the guests traveled back and forth to the feast from home each day. Rather, the wedding guests stayed there on location the whole time. And in those days, and for hundreds of years into the future actually, a favorite party activity was the telling of riddles. And along with the riddles came drinking copious amounts of alcohol. Now, there is no statement that Samson drank. But if he had not, it would have been a serious breach of hospitality and protocol. Plus, strictly speaking, a Nazirite was only supposed to stay away from grape-based alcohol, even though tradition made it all alcohol, and many kinds of alcohol are made out of grains. In any case, there are a few scholars, but the majority of rabbis, who try to make the case that Samson avoided the alcohol. It would have gone against everything we're told about his character to think that he didn't partake at least a little. So the bridegroom does his duty to entertain the folks, and he offers a riddle. And to go along with it, a wager. If the 30 male guests can decipher the answer to the riddle, Samson promises to buy them each 30 linen shirts and 30 changes of good clothing. Varying Bible versions offer different translations about the clothing, but the Hebrew helps to explain it. The so-called shirts are in Hebrew setinim, and they are rectangular pieces of fine linen that are often used as soft undergarments. I mean, I think you can imagine how itchy and scratchy most of their outer clothing must have been. The changes of clothing is in Hebrew chalifa, and it means a festive garment, a chalifa. Now, kind of what we might call our Sunday best, reserved for special occasions. The point is, these were expensive garments. And Samson was really sticking his neck out. If he lost fair and square, one wonders where he would have acquired the funds for so many of these costly items. Now, naturally, part of the bargain was that if the men couldn't answer the riddle by the end of the seven-day marriage feast, then they each owed Samson a sedin and a chalifa. Samson was not planning on losing, because in reality, the riddle was not a fair one. But his guests accepted the challenge and the die was cast. Out of the eater came food, out of the strong came sweetness. That was the riddle that was to be solved. This is referring, of course, to the lion that Samson killed and the honey that the bees formed inside of it. Now, who could ever guess such a thing? This is nothing that logic or good deductive reasoning or cleverness could ever penetrate. One had to be there at the lion incident to have any idea what Samson was talking about. So solving such a so-called riddle was impossible. Well, here again is Samson's character flaws showing themselves. He has organized a sucker bet at his own wedding feast, taking advantage of his own guests. That's not very nice. But of course, this is more or less what the Lord God had planned all along as a means to stoke the fires of unrest between the Philistines and the Israelites. So verse 14 tells us that after 3 days of all 30 men working together to solve this unsolvable riddle, they knew they'd been had. Yet apparently they continued to try various methods to find the answer. Unsuccessful, they were beginning to realize that not only had Samson made a fool out of them, but they were going to leave the wedding feast a little bit poorer than when they had arrived. This infuriated them. So they confronted Shimshon's bride, and they demanded that she pry the solution for the riddle out of her husband. Now, there's a little bit of a problem with the timing here. We're not going to go into depth to solve it. It could take quite a while to deal with it, so I'm just going to summarize it. Notice that it says that after 3 days, they had guessed the answer to the riddle, but then on the seventh day, they went to Samson's bride. Next, we see Samson's bride ask. Samson refuses, and then he gives in because he said she cried for the entire 7 days. By the seventh day, Samson finally broke down and told her. So we see a bunch of timing conflicts here. We know, for instance, that it was sometime after the third day of the seven-day feast that the 30 men approached the bride, yet it says she cried for all 7 days. Presumably get Samson to finally tell her the answer. And then we're told that before 7 days ended, they appropriated the solution from the bride and gave it to Samson. Here's the thing. The problem can be solved if one understands that we probably have a contextual mixing of the same term that means two different things. The term is 7 days. 7 days was the length of the wedding feast, but we have no idea what day of the week it began. 7 days is also how long the girl cried, and the seventh day is also the common biblical term meaning the Sabbath. The Sabbath is the seventh and final day of the week. Thus, very likely, it was not on the seventh day of the wedding banquet that the men came to the girl to convince her to help them solve the riddle. Rather, it was referring to the seventh day of the standard week, the Shabbat. I'll let you take it from there for time's sake. In any case, Samson didn't want to tell the girl, at least partly because he undoubtedly felt she was going to divulge the answer. I mean, after all, despite the fact that they were in the marriage process, her family was Philistines. Her culture was Philistine. All of her friends were Philistine. The pressure would have been too much for her to not help out those who she had been closest to all of her life. In fact, Samson says that not even his own parents knew the answer to the riddle. In fact, Samson says that nobody can do it. And for good reason. They weren't present. Nobody was present when Samson discovered the honey. Samson gave them honey from an unclean lion carcass. If they ever found out, if his parents ever found out, they'd be furious with Samson because they'd have to go through a long, costly process of ritual purification. And the mere thought of what they had ingested would have turned their stomachs. But this also proved to be an important tool for the Lord to use in his determination to undermine the peace process between the Philistines and the Israelites. Samson's bride's tears finally had their desired effect. Samson told her the answer to the riddle. Men, I think we can all identify with this. When my wife cries for even a few minutes, I'm ready to do anything to stop the flow of tears. I mean, men, we just have no idea what to do with a crying woman, let's face it. I'm not saying anything you women don't know either. See, now I'm going to tell you right, my wife's never cried for a whole day, let alone for seven, as in the story of Samson's wedding. So I think we can cut Samson a little bit of slack, guys. Unfortunately, this girl instantly went to these 30 men when she found out the answer, told them the riddle solution, and just moments before the end of the seventh day feast, of the seventh day of the feast, that's the idea in verse 18 when it says, before sundown on the seventh day, when the time would have ended for the men to declare the answer, or, oh, Samson, all that clothing, they went to him and gave him the answer. Now, Samson may have been incorrigible, but he was no dummy. He knew immediately that his wife had betrayed him. So he told the men in a kind of riddle form that he knew what they had done. I mean, after all, only he and his bride knew the answer to this riddle, the only ones that could have. Thus the words, if you hadn't plowed with my young cow, you wouldn't have solved my riddle now. That's actually a pretty good poem thing there, and it rhymes really well. And now I want to detour for a minute. All throughout this story, at least since the beginning of the banquet, this girl has been called Samson's wife. But that isn't exactly correct. The Hebrew term being translated is ishishay, and it can mean girl, woman, or wife. The meaning it has to be derived from the context. The problem in this story is that the whole wedding process was interrupted before the end of the seventh day. But more important, this rift between Samson and his bride seems to have happened before they had sexually consummated their marriage. This is the key, because by Hebrew standards, this consummation is the concluding act of the marriage protocol. No consummation, no marriage. Thus, the ancient Hebrew marriage ceremony consisted of a gathering of friends and family, a very brief ceremony, officiated by parents, and then everyone watched as the couple went into their home to consummate their union. Now, I've told you the story of the marriage cloth. that was used as the proof of the consummation. You can go back and get a detailed explanation from other Torah lessons. The cloth was then given to the mother of the bride for safekeeping because, in effect, this was the equivalent of a signed marriage certificate. The point is this. By everything in the scriptures, there was no consummation of this marriage. Thus, Samson and his bride were never officially married. So to translate the term Isha as wife is a misnomer. So why do we find it this way? The answer is that the rabbis, especially those who helped to create the Greek Septuagint, wanted to make Samson out as a great and near-perfect man, rather than a seriously flawed man. Thus, they concocted all kinds of fanciful, unsubstantiated excuses and scenarios that just changed the plain meaning of the holy texts. For instance, they claimed that before Samson married this girl, she converted to Judaism. Then they claimed that Samson and this girl were legally married in correct Torah fashion, thus this girl was his wife. The next chapter actually brings up this issue in more detail, and we'll examine that a little more at that time. Well, Samson was beside himself in anger now. His betrothed had betrayed him, just as bad. Somehow he had to come up with 30 sets of clothing for his guests as their prize for solving the riddle. So rather than just tell the men that their method of getting the answer negated what he owed them, he determined he would meet his obligation. And I suspect that had he argued against this, his own guilt as forming a riddle that was unfair and only he could possibly know the answer to would have become all the more apparent. So boiling with rage, he went to Ashkelon, which was about 20 miles away, and he proceeded to kill 30 male citizens of Ashkelon to take their clothes away from them as a gift for his wedding guests. Now understand, these men that he killed had no connection with the wedding. They weren't any part of this. By all accounts, these were just random killings, random murders. But undoubtedly, Samson picked men who possessed a special kind of clothing that the bet required. So he took their clothes, gave it to the men he owed them to, then he went to his father's house in Zorah of Judah. Back in Timnah, his wife, or almost wife, and her family waited for Samson to return, but he didn't. What a terrible insult to her family, and what a dilemma. Was this girl married or was she not married? Would Samson return and complete the marriage process, or was this girl to remain in limbo? Well, after some time passed, we don't know if it was days or months, the girl's father gave her in marriage to Samson's best man. I mean, what a mess. Well, I'm going to end today by backing up a couple of verses to verse 19. Verse 19 states that the spirit of Jehovah came over Samson as he went to Ashkelon with murder on his mind. And the Ruach, the spirit, gave Samson a burst of supernatural strength that allowed him to go through the city and kill these random Philistine men in order to take their clothing from them. This reminds us that the Lord God was behind all of this. Yep. Samson's own evil inclinations made him this impetuous bully with real anger management issues. But the Lord unapologetically used this characteristic of Samson for his purposes. Samson's rash decision to marry that Philistine girl, the girl's decision to betray her fiancé to 30 wedding guests, then her father's decision to give her to another man after Samson took off, now made any reconciliation impossible. Samson's war against the Philistines was about to begin. And by the way, the rabbis handle all this and what is about to come by explaining that Samson's so-called wife now gave up her recently acquired Judaism and returned to the religion of her Philistine family. We will start chapter 15 next time.
Help support God's people by purchasing items made by them. Merchandise with a meaning. Products with a purpose. HolyLandMarketplace.com. For more teachings, visit, support, or donate at TorahClass.com. Join with us in worship and enjoy God's Word at Seed of Abraham Fellowship.